Garbage. He'll probably do it to someone else, too. Believe me, I've thought about that, too. But, Daphne, I have too many people depending on me. I can't report him and take the chance of not being able to get a job. Damn him. He knows he has you in a corner. He gave me a good reference. I just need to hit the pavement now. She smiled at Daphne. And the upside is that my days are free, so I'm free to work full-time on the fundraiser. You find the good in everything, don't you? I'll respect your wishes, even though I'd love to go over and let him have it. It's so noble of you, helping your mom. Amber watched Daphne's face as she grew quiet, seemingly contemplating something. Amber wondered if Daphne was thinking of her own mother and feeling guilty.
You know what? I'm going to talk to Jackson. There might be something for you at his company.
Amber made herself look surprised.
You really think so? That would be amazing. I'd be willing to do anything. Even starting as an administrative assistant or something like that would be great.
This time her smile was genuine.
Of course. They must have something for you. I'll speak to him tonight.
In the meantime, let's do something to cheer you up. How about a little shopping? She must have noticed the look on Amber's face and realized that shopping was the last thing she could afford now that she was out of work. Honestly, how long had it been since this woman had lived in the real world?
Sorry, you must think me terribly insensitive. What I meant was, I'd love to take you shopping. My treat. And before you argue, remember, I didn't grow up with all this.
She swept her arm across the room. I'm from a little town in New Hampshire. Probably not that different from where you were raised. When I first met Jackson and saw this house, I thought it was ridiculous. All the excess. Over time, you get used to it. Maybe too used to it. And spending time with the women here, I must admit, I've lost myself a little. Amber kept silent, curious to see where Daphne's little confession was going.
You've helped me remember what's really important, why I came here to begin with, to help other families and to ease the suffering of those with this terrible disease. Jackson's made a lot of money, but I don't want that to build a wall between you and me. For the first time since I lost my sister, I actually feel close to someone. Please, let me do this.
Amber liked the sound of that. The best part was that she could make Daphne feel like Amber was the one being generous. She wondered if she could get her to spring for a whole new work wardrobe. She widened her eyes.
Are you sure?
Very.
Well, I suppose I could use a few things for my job search. Can you help me pick out a new interview outfit?
I would love to. Amber suppressed a laugh. Daphne was so nice she almost felt guilty. She had figured it would take some subtle hinting and footwork to nudge Daphne into suggesting a job at Parrish International, but Daphne had bitten before she'd even tasted the bait. And poor, happily married Mark Jansen, whose reputation she had besmirched, had never made anything resembling an advance toward her. She would call Mark this afternoon and resign. The engine was humming. It was now just a matter of driving the car. 17. The big evening had finally arrived, and, despite herself, Amber was as nervous as an actress on opening night. The fundraiser began at 8, but Jackson and Daphne were picking her up at 6 so they could be there early and make sure everything was in order. Daphne had spared her the worry of how she would come up with the $250 for the ticket by purchasing the whole table and inviting her. Amber poured herself a glass of Chardonnay. The wine and music would relax her as she dressed. This was not her night to shine, but on the other hand, she didn't want to show up looking like some small-town hick. She went to the bed,
where she'd laid out her clothes for the evening, picking up the black lace thong and slipping it over her slender hips. Nobody would see her underwear, but she would know how sexy she looked underneath that dress, and it would make a difference in the way she felt. Then the dress, the gorgeous Valentino she'd chosen from Daphne's closet. It was a simple, floor-length black number with a high neck, long sleeves, and a draped back. Subtly sexy, but not in the least obvious. She pulled her hair back into a sleek chignon and applied minimal makeup. The only jewelry she wore was the pearl necklace Daphne had given her for Christmas and her small pearl earrings. She took one last look in the mirror and smiled at her reflection. Satisfied, she grabbed her handbag, a small silver clutch she'd picked up cheap at DSW. She caught a whiff of Daphne's perfume as she draped the silver silk shawl Daphne had lent her around her shoulders. She stood at the door and, before turning out the light, looked back at the room she lived in. She tried to ignore her surroundings, but it was becoming more and more difficult as she was exposed to the way Daphne and her friends lived. She had graduated from the dreary home of her youth to this monk-like existence. She sighed, banished the memories from her mind, and closed the door behind her. At 5:50, she walked down the short path from the building to the street. At precisely 6:00, the black town car pulled up. She wondered what her neighbors on her modest street were thinking, as the chauffeur got out of the car and opened the door for her. She slid into the back seat, across from Jackson and Daphne.
"Hello, Daphne, Jackson. Thanks so much for picking me up."
"Of course," Daphne said. "You look lovely. The dress looks like it was made for you. You should keep it."
Jackson looked at her a long moment and then turned away. He seemed slightly annoyed, Amber thought. Great. She'd been hoping to make a lasting impression on him, and she was, but for the completely wrong reason. She never should have agreed to borrow a dress from Daphne. What had she been thinking?
"I went to the hotel a little earlier to see the auction set up," Daphne said, smoothing over the awkwardness.
"It looks beautiful. I think we'll do well."
"I think so, too," Amber said. "The silent auction items are fabulous. Can't wait to see how much the villa in Santorini goes for."
The small talk continued as they drove to the hotel. She noticed that Jackson held his wife's hand for the entire drive, and when they arrived, he gently and lovingly helped her out of the car, leaving the chauffeur to lend Amber a hand. He was nuts about Daphne, Amber thought, and felt her determination wilt a bit. They were not the first to arrive. The decorating committee was already there, putting the finishing touches on the auction table and placing the floral centerpieces on the 50 tables covered in pink tablecloths and black napkins. The band was setting up at the far end of the room, and the bartenders were arranging their stock. They'd be busy tonight.
"Wow, Daphne, it looks amazing," Amber said.
Jackson put his arm around Daphne's waist and, pulling her to him, nuzzled her ear.
"Great job, my darling. You've outdone yourself."
Amber looked at them, Jackson resembling a movie star in his black dinner jacket, and Daphne absolutely gorgeous in a strapless chiffon gown of emerald green that hugged every curve of her body.
"Thank you, sweetheart. That means so much to me."
She looked at Jackson and then pulled away.
"I really need to check on my volunteers and see if anyone needs anything. You'll excuse me, yes?"
Daphne turned to Amber.
"Stay here and keep Jackson company while I see if Meredith has everything she needs."
"Sure," Amber said.
Jackson continued to watch Daphne as she walked across the ballroom, seemingly unaware that Amber was even there.
"You must be very proud of your wife tonight," Amber said.
"What?"
He tore his eyes away from Daphne.
I said you must be very proud of your wife tonight.
She's the most beautiful and accomplished woman in this room, he said with pride.
Daphne's been wonderful to me. My best friend, really.
Jackson frowned.
Your best friend?
Amber sensed immediately that she'd made a mistake.
Well, not best friend exactly. More like a mentor. She's taught me so much.
She saw him relax a little. This was proving to be an exercise in futility. Obviously, nothing in her plan was going to move forward tonight.
I think I'll go see if I can be of any help, she said to Jackson.
He gestured absently.
Righto. Good idea.
The evening was a smashing success. The bidding was frenzied, and the crowd drank and danced until midnight. Amber walked around the room, taking it all in, the designer dresses and opulent jewels, the snippets of gossip and laughter from the clustered groups of women, the men in black tie loudly discussing the latest S&P 500 losing streak. The world of the rich and mighty, mingling and toasting each other, smug and confident in their little 1% corner of the world. Despite being seated at Daphne's table, though, Amber felt as out of place here as she had at the dry cleaners. She wanted to belong somewhere, to have people look up to her, fawn over her the way they did Daphne. She was tired of being the girl no one noticed or cared about. But tonight was not turning out the way she'd hoped. Jackson never took his eyes off Daphne. He was always reaching for her hand or running his hand up and down her back. For the first time, Amber was disheartened, wondering if her plan was unworkable, if the prize was out of reach. She watched the dancers from her seat, some of the May-December couples looking comically unsuited to one another. Something flashed in the corner of her eye, making Amber turn to see a photographer. She turned her head quickly as the flashing continued, praying her image had not been caught on camera. Jackson and Daphne had been on the dance floor a good portion of the evening, and now they came walking back to the table. She saw Daphne give Jackson a discreet push, and he stood in front of Amber.
"Would you care to dance?"
he asked. Amber looked at Daphne, who smiled and nodded at her.
"I'd love to."
She rose and took Jackson's hand as he led her to the dance floor. She relaxed into Jackson's strong arms, inhaling the clean, masculine smell of him, enjoying the feel of his arms around her and his body against hers. She closed her eyes and pretended he belonged to her, that she was the envy of every woman in the room. The high lasted even though the dance ended. He didn't ask her again, but that one dance was enough to get her through the rest of the evening. At 12:30, Amber strode to the long table where volunteers sat waiting to help winning bidders check out. She sat down at the credit card machine next to Meredith.
"We did well tonight," Meredith said.
"Yes, it was a great success. Of course, you were a big part of that."
Amber was laying it on thick, but Meredith wasn't biting.
"Oh, please, it was a group effort. Everyone worked equally," she said stiffly.
Amber had nothing to say in response. This bitch would never accept her, so why should she even try? They continued to work side by side in silence as people checked out. As they were finishing up, Meredith turned to Amber.
"Daphne tells me you're from Nebraska."
"I am."
"I've never been there. What's it like?"
she said, with not one iota of curiosity in her voice. Amber thought for a moment.
"I come from a small town. They're pretty much all the same."
"Hmm, I suppose they are. What town, exactly?"
"Eustis. You've probably never heard of it."
Before Meredith could continue her interrogation, Daphne appeared in front of them.
"You're all amazing. she said to the volunteers at the table. Thank you so much for this phenomenal night. Now go home and get some much-needed rest. I love all of you. She looked at Amber. Are you ready to go?
Yes, we're all finished. I'll just get my things.
On the drive home, Jackson and Daphne looked like lovebirds, his hand firmly on her thigh.
Your speech was good.
Jackson squeezed her leg. Daphne looked surprised.
Thank you.
I wish you would let me look it over.
You were so busy, I didn't want to bother you.
He stroked her leg.
I'm never too busy to help you, darling.
Daphne leaned her head against his shoulder and closed her eyes. Amber grew disheartened as she watched their interaction. It was obvious to her that Jackson took a loving interest in every aspect of Daphne's life. Daphne had been easy pickings, but Jackson was going to be a different matter entirely. He was going to require all of Amber's cunning and ingenuity. 18. It had been a month since the fundraiser, but Amber was still feeling off balance after seeing Jackson's devotion to Daphne that night. Her connection to Daphne was just getting stronger, though. She was on her way to Tallulah's 11th birthday party, having become fully ensconced in Daphne's life and invited to almost all family events. Daphne was so trusting of her that it almost made her feel bad. Almost. Amber had gotten Tallulah a book on the life of Edgar Allan Poe and had thought it wise to also pick up a little something for Bella. She was beginning to understand the workings of the little brat's mind and figured watching Tallulah open a ton of gifts would not be at the top of Bella's list of fun things to do. When she entered the playroom, the children were seated in a big circle as two women unloaded cages with exotic birds and small zoo animals. Amber walked to where Daphne and an older woman stood watching the fun.
Amber, welcome. Come meet my mother.
Daphne clasped Amber's hand in hers.
Mom, this is my friend Amber.
The woman stretched her arm out for a handshake.
I'm pleased to meet you, Amber. I'm Ruth.
Nice to meet you, Amber replied, juggling the presents she'd brought so that she could shake Ruth's hand.
My goodness, Daphne said. What have you got there?
Oh, just a few presents. Why don't you put them in with the others in the conservatory? The zoo show will start soon. You don't want to miss that, Daphne said. When Amber entered the conservatory, she was startled once again by the excess. Not that she wouldn't have wanted the same kind of party as a kid, but she hadn't even known anything like this existed when she was little. The presents were piled high, and a large table had been moved into the room for the children's lunch. Each place was carefully set with colorful plates and napkins, and beautifully wrapped goodie bags were perched at each spot. It was completely kid-friendly and sublimely elegant at the same time. She put her gifts down and left the room. As she walked back to the party room, she saw Jackson coming down the hall. He gave her a charming smile.
Hi there. So glad you could join us today, he said with enthusiasm.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, she stuttered.
He gave her another wide smile and held the playroom door for her. They stood together and watched as the handlers brought out one animal after another and explained a little about them, Jackson with a drink in hand. Amber had difficulty keeping her eyes from straying to him. She wondered how long it would take to get him into bed. The thought that she could have this man of power and wealth under her spell exhilarated her. She knew how to please a man, and suspected that after over a decade of marriage, the sex between him and Daphne had to be pretty boring and stale. Amber could picture the things she could do to make him want her if given half the chance. She resolved to take her time and carefully stick to her plan.
No sense in rushing and messing things up like before. When the show ended, the adults tried to calm the children as they tromped into the conservatory for lunch. It was noisy and riotous, with raucous laughter and high-pitched voices. Amber felt like she was going to scream, and she noticed that Jackson wasn't in the room where everyone was eating. Finally, Margarita brought out the huge birthday cake covered in chocolate icing and topped with 11 white candles in the shape of ballerinas. Amber noticed a small chunk missing from one side of the cake.
"Okay," Daphne said in a loud voice. "Time to sing happy birthday, and then Tallulah can open her presents."
Amber could see the storm clouds gathering behind Bella's eyes as the children and adults sang to her sister. Her mouth was set in a straight line, and her arms were crossed in front of her. She was having none of it. The minute the singing stopped and Tallulah had blown out the candles, Daphne began handing her the presents. At the table, the children were happy and occupied eating cake, as Tallulah unwrapped one after another and thanked the giver. After the seventh one, Bella's voice rang out.
"It's not fair! Tallulah's getting all the presents! Where's mine?"
This was the moment Amber had been waiting for.
"Hey, Bella, I brought a present for Tallulah, but I brought one for you, too. I'll give Tallulah hers, and here's the one for you. I hope you like it."
Daphne smiled at her, and Ruth looked at her with an expression Amber couldn't quite read. Amber noticed that Jackson had just come back into the room, and she hoped he had seen the exchange. Bella ripped off the wrapping paper and opened the box. She held up the pink sweater with a white faux fur collar and the small pink handbag with its shiny handle and smiled. She ran to Amber and flung her arms around her waist.
"I love you, Amber. You're my best friend ever."
Everyone laughed at this show of affection, but Amber noticed that Ruth didn't seem as amused as the rest of the guests. Tallulah was nearing the end of the presents, the last one a small box from Sabine.
"Oh, Sabine, je suis très heureux. Merci."
Tallulah held up a gold chain with a slender cross.
"De rien," Sabine said.
The local glitterati soon began arriving to pick up their little rich kids, who had once again been treated to splendiferous entertainment, yummy food, and expensive swag bags. No wonder they all grew up with a sense of entitlement. They knew nothing else. After all the guests had gone, Suri, the other nanny, gathered up the presents.
"Would you take the gifts upstairs with the girls? If you bathe them and get them into pajamas, we'll have a light dinner around 6.
Daphne instructed her. Jackson poured himself another scotch.
"Can I get anyone a drink?"
"I'll have a glass of wine, sweetheart," Daphne said. "Mom, would you like anything?"
"I'll have a club soda."
Jackson looked at Amber.
"And you?"
"May I have a glass of wine, too?"
Jackson laughed.
"You may have anything you want."
"That's what I'm hoping," Amber thought, but she simply smiled back at him.
"Daphne, have you showed Amber the photos from the fundraiser?" Ruth said, then looked at Amber. "There were some very good ones in the Bishop's Harbor Times. You look very pretty in one of them."
Amber's heart stopped. Photos? In a newspaper? She'd been so careful to avoid the photographer that night. When had he gotten a picture of her? Daphne brought the newspaper in and handed it to her. She picked it up with trembling hands and scanned the pictures. There she was, large as life, completely recognizable. Her name wasn't there, not that it would have mattered. Her face was the problem. She just had to assume that this small-town newspaper with its limited range would not be seen farther afield.
"Would you excuse me?"
She needed to get out of that room and calm her nerves. She closed the bathroom door, put the lid down on the toilet seat,
and sat with her head in her hands.
How could she have been so careless?
After a while, her breathing settled, and she promised herself she would be more vigilant in the future. She splashed some water on her face, stood up straight, and slowly opened the door. She could hear Ruth and Daphne as she walked back to the conservatory.
"Mom, you don't understand. I have my hands full here."
"You're right, Daphne. I don't understand. You used to love singing in the church choir. It seems to me you don't do any of the things you used to love. You've let all this money go to your head. If you know what's good for you, you'll remember your roots and come down off your high horse."
"That's completely unfair. You don't know what you're talking about."
"I know what I see. Two nannies, for heaven's sake, and one that just speaks French. Really? A daughter who's spoiled rotten that you can't control. The club, all your lessons. For goodness sake, I practically have to make an appointment to see my granddaughters. What's happened to you?"
"That's enough, Mother."
For the first time, Amber heard real fury in Daphne's voice. And then the sound of the nanny and the girls coming down the stairs. They all entered the conservatory at the same time, and the conversation between mother and daughter abruptly ended. Bella ran to Daphne, putting her head on her mother's lap. Her cries were muted, and then she looked up and said,
"Tallulah got so many presents, and I only got two. It's not fair."
Ruth leaned over and stroked Bella's face.
"Bella, darling, it's Tallulah's birthday. When it's your birthday, you'll get all the presents, right?"
Bella jerked away from her grandmother's hand.
"No, you're ugly."
"Bella!"
Daphne seemed horrified. Jackson suddenly appeared, strode over to the sofa, and picked Bella up. She wiggled and squirmed, but he held her tightly, and she finally was still. He put her down on the other side of the room and, kneeling so they were eye level, spoke quietly to her. After a few minutes, they came back together, and Bella stood before her grandmother.
"I'm very sorry, Grandmama," she said, and bowed her head.
Ruth gave Daphne a triumphant look and took Bella's hand.
"I forgive you, Bella, but you mustn't say things like that in the future."
Bella looked at her father and got only a stern look in return.
"Yes, Grandmama."
Margarita peered into the room and announced that dinner was ready. Jackson took Ruth's arm, and the two of them marched into the dining room together, Bella and Tallulah right behind them. As Daphne rose, Amber gave her a pat on the shoulder.
"It's been a long day. Bella's just overtired. Don't let them all get to you," she said.
"Sometimes that's really hard," Daphne said.
"You're a wonderful mom. Don't let anyone tell you that you're not."
"Thanks, Amber. You're such a good friend."
In a way, Daphne was a wonderful mother. She gave her kids everything, especially love and affection. She was certainly a better mother than Amber's, who'd made it clear every day of her life that her kids were a loathsome burden.
"Don't leave yet. Stay and have dinner with us," Daphne said.
Amber wasn't sure that dinner with an exhausted, exasperated Bella and a disapproving grandmother was going to further her plans in any way.
"I'd love to, Daph, but I have tons of laundry and cleaning to do. Thanks for asking, though."
"Oh, all right," Daphne said, linking her arm in Amber's.
"At least come to the dining room and say goodnight to everyone."
She obediently followed Daphne into the room, where the family was all seated and being served by Margarita.
"Good night, all," Amber said, waving her hand. "It was a wonderful party."
A chorus of farewells came from the group, and then Jackson's smooth voice rang out.
"Good night, Amber. See you tomorrow at the office."
19. Amber dressed carefully for her first day at Parrish International. Her hair was pulled back into a ponytail, and she wore plain gold-colored hoop earrings and minimal makeup. Getting up at 4 o'clock to catch the 5:30 train was murder, but she had to make a good impression. How anyone could stand doing this on a long-term basis was beyond her. Hopefully, it would only be temporary. The glass tower that housed Jackson's company was enormous, and she marveled that he owned it. It must have cost a fortune to own a building like this in Manhattan. The lobby was empty except for security, and she nodded as she scanned her identity badge and was green-lighted through the turnstile. When she reached the 30th floor, she was surprised to see a few people already in their offices. She'd have to get an even earlier train tomorrow. Her tiny cubicle was outside her boss's office. She would be reporting to his first assistant, Mrs. Batley, or Mrs. Battleaxe, as Amber thought of her after their meeting last week at orientation. The Battleaxe was somewhere between 65 and 75, with steel-wool gray hair, thick glasses, and thin lips. She was the very definition of no-nonsense, and Amber hated her on sight. She had made it clear that she wasn't pleased that Amber had been thrust upon her. It was going to be a challenge getting the old bird to like her.
"Good morning, Mrs. Batley. I'm going to get some coffee. Would you like some?"
She didn't look up from her laptop.
"No, I've already had my one cup. I have some filing for you, so please see me when you've gotten yours."
Amber cast a discreet glance in the direction of Jackson's corner office. His door was closed, but she could see movement through the slatted blinds covering one glass wall.
"Did you need something?"
Batley's gravelly voice interrupted her thoughts.
"Sorry, no. My coffee can wait. I'll take the filing now."
"Here you are," she said, handing Amber a pile of papers. "And here's a list of new clients to add to the database. I've left instructions on your desk on how to do so. You'll also need to add their websites and all social media channels to their profiles." Amber took the folder and returned to her tiny cube. She'd traded in her office with a window view for this claustrophobic cube, but at least now her plan was progressing. The hours passed as she immersed herself in her work, determined to be the most efficient assistant old Battleaxe had ever had. She'd brought a bag lunch and ate at her desk, working without a break. At 6 o'clock, Batley was standing at her cube with her coat on.
"I didn't realize you were still here, Amber. You can leave at 5, you know."
She stood up and gathered her things.
"I wanted to finish up. I like to come into a clean desk in the morning."
This actually elicited a smile from the older woman.
"Quite right. I've always felt the same way."
She turned to leave, but Amber called out,
"I'll walk down with you."
They walked in silence to the elevator bank, and when they got on, Amber gave her a shy smile.
"I want to thank you for giving me this chance. You don't know how much it means to me."
Batley raised her eyebrows.
"Don't thank me. I had nothing to do with it."
"Mrs. Parrish told me how valuable your opinion is to Mr. Parrish," Amber said. "She made it quite clear that I was here on a probationary basis. If you don't find me up to snuff, then I'll have to look elsewhere." Amber could tell that the woman's pride made her believe this bullshit. Batley stood a little straighter.
"We shall see, then."
"Yes, we shall," Amber thought. After a month, she'd still had no direct contact with Jackson, but old Battleaxe had begun to rely on her more and more. Amber would arrive at least 15 minutes before her, so that she could bring Batley her morning coffee, with a little something extra in it. Amber had a 3-month supply of Elavil from her internist. She had told him that she was having panic attacks, and he'd recommended it. He did mention some possible side effects, short-term memory loss, and confusion. She'd started dosing low and hoped that Batley's predilection for flavored creamer obscured any trace of the pills in her coffee. Batley arrived that morning, seemingly more confused than normal. Amber noticed that her pace had become slower and that she paused often, looking around her desk as if unsure of what to do next. When Batley got up to go to the bathroom, Amber quickly went into her office and took the woman's keys from her purse and moved them. She then refiled a folder that was sitting on her desk. Batley came back to her office and searched for the missing file, panic in her eyes. At the end of the day, Batley opened her purse and looked inside. Amber watched as she moved the contents around and finally poured everything out on her desk. No keys. She looked stricken. "Amber?" she called. "Have you seen my keys?" Amber hurried into Batley's office.
"No, I haven't. Aren't they in your handbag?"
"No," she said, almost in tears.
"Here," Amber said, taking the purse from the desk. "Let me look."
She pretended to root around.
You're right. Not here."
She stood a moment as if thinking.
"Have you looked in your drawers?"
"Of course not. I never take them from my pocketbook. I would never put them in my desk," she insisted.
"Why don't we look, just in case?"
"Ridiculous," Batley huffed, but opened the drawer. "See? They're not there." Amber leaned over to look and then glanced past them, at the wastebasket next to the file cabinet. She pulled it toward her.
"They're in the trash can."
Amber reached in and pulled them out, handing them to Batley. Batley stood still, staring at the ring of keys in her hand as she swallowed hard. It was apparent that the woman was distraught, but all she said was good night before turning and leaving without another word. Amber smiled as she watched her walk away. A few days later, Amber rearranged the cards in Batley's Rolodex. She must have been the last person on Earth to still have one. As the weeks wore on, the stress was having the intended effect. A haunted look of constant worry was in the older woman's eyes. Amber felt a little bad about what she was doing, but the woman really needed to retire. Her time would have been much better spent with her grandkids. She'd told Amber she had 5 and complained that she didn't get to see them enough. Now she'd get to be with them more, and Jackson would probably give her a good retirement package, especially if he believed she had dementia. Amber was doing her a favor, really. And didn't Jackson deserve someone more hip and this century helping him out? He was probably keeping her on out of loyalty. Amber was doing them both a favor when she thought about it. This morning, she printed off a paper with gibberish and slipped it in between the pages of a report Batley had just finished. She knew the woman would think she'd really lost it when she saw it, and of course, she'd never mention it to anyone. Amber figured it would only take another few weeks. Between her eroding self-confidence and the mistakes she was soon to make, arousing Jackson's suspicions, Amber would be sitting pretty in Batley's office in no time.
20.
It took much longer than Amber anticipated, but after 3 months, it had all become too much for Batley, and she handed in her resignation. Amber was now filling in while Jackson began the search for a new head assistant. She was still in her tiny cubicle, while Batley's office remained vacant, and while it bothered Amber that he hadn't yet considered letting her step in permanently, she was confident he would soon find her indispensable. She had already spent the past 7 nights learning everything she could about his newest clients from Tokyo. It was amazing what people put on their social media profiles. Even if they did have the smarts to set up their privacy settings properly, what they didn't realize was that every photo they were tagged in linked to someone else's page, and not everyone was as diligent. Between using her background check software and trolling all the social sites, she had a comprehensive picture of each of them, including their disgusting predilections. She had also conducted a thorough search of their recent business deals to get an idea of their negotiating skills and any tricks they might have up their sleeves. Jackson summoned her to his office, and she gathered the report on the client. He was leaning back in his black leather chair, reading something on his iPhone. His jacket was off, and his shirt sleeves rolled up, showing off his tanned forearms. The Parishes had just returned from Antibes. She figured they were able to practice the French language they seemed to worship. He didn't look up as she entered the office.
"I'm slammed today, but I forgot Bella's play at camp is this afternoon. I have to duck out after lunch. Move my appointments."
What must it be like to have a powerful father who cared enough about you to take time from his busy schedule to come to your play? And the little brat appreciated nothing.
"Of course."
"Did you make reservations at Catch for Tanaka and his team tomorrow?"
"Actually, no."
His head snapped up. She had his full attention.
"What?"
"I made them at Del Posto. Tanaka loves Italian, and he's allergic to shellfish."
He looked at her with interest.
"Really? How do you know that?"
She handed him her report.
"I took the liberty of doing some research. On my own time, of course," she added quickly. "I thought it would be helpful. With social media, it's not that hard to find things out."
He smiled widely, giving her a glimpse of his perfect teeth, and reached out for the report. After thumbing through it, he looked up again.
"Amber, I'm very impressed. Great initiative. This is fantastic."
She beamed. She bet Batley didn't even know how to use Facebook. She stood up.
"If there's nothing else, I'll go take care of sorting your appointments."
"Thanks," he mumbled,
immersed in the report again. She was making progress with him, although she was a little disappointed that he didn't seem to notice how good her legs looked in the short skirt and high heels she'd worn that day. He was that rare commodity, a man who only had eyes for his wife. Daphne, on the other hand, seemed complacent, like she took it for granted that he worshipped her. It irritated Amber. It was obvious to her that Daphne wasn't as passionate about Jackson as he was about her, and that she really didn't deserve him. She opened up Jackson's calendar on her computer and began contacting his afternoon appointments to reschedule. As she was about to make another call, he appeared.
"Amber, why don't you sit in Mrs. Batley's office until we find her replacement? It'll be more convenient to have you right outside. Give facilities a call. They can move your things."
"Thank you, I will."
She watched him as he strode away, his Brioni suit looking as though it had been handcrafted by the gods. She wondered what it would be like to wear a garment that cost more than some people made in a year. She picked up her phone and texted Daphne.
"Are you free tomorrow? Would love to meet for a drink."
Her text tone sounded.
"Sure, I'll have Tommy pick you up and we can go to Sparta's. 7:30 good?"
"Great, see you tomorrow."
If Daphne was having Tommy drive them, it meant she was in the mood to drink, which was perfect, because Amber was ready to get her to spill her guts. She had discovered that after one martini, Daphne became much more relaxed, making it easy to pour a few more down her throat. 21. The parish town car was waiting outside her apartment right on time. She was about to call out a hello to Daphne when she realized the back seat was empty.
"Where's Mrs. Parrish?" she asked Tommy as he opened the door for her.
"Mr. Parrish came home unexpectedly. She asked me to collect you and drop you at Sparta's, then swing around for her."
She felt annoyance choke out her good mood.
Why hadn't Daphne just called and asked if they could move the time back? She felt like an appointment being handled. And why should it matter that Jackson came home? Why didn't Daphne just tell him she already had plans? Where was her backbone? When she got to the bar, she chose a cozy table in the corner and ordered the 2007 Sasakaya. It was $210, but Daphne would be picking up the bill, and it served her right for making Amber wait. She took a sip of the Red Delight and savored the opulent flavor. It was amazing. She looked around as the lounge began to fill, and wondered if any of Daphne's so-called friends would be coming in tonight. She hoped not. She wanted Daphne all to herself. Daphne finally arrived, looking harried and, frankly, a little unkempt. Her hair was a bit frizzy, and her makeup splotchy. "I'm sorry, Amber. Just as I was leaving, Jackson came in, and..." She threw her hands up. "Not even worth getting into. I need a drink." She glanced at the bottle, and a little frown furrowed her brow. "I hope you don't mind that I ordered a bottle. I forgot my reading glasses and couldn't really see that well, so I asked the waiter for a recommendation." Daphne started to say something and then seemed to think better of it. "It's fine." A glass appeared, and she poured herself a generous serving. "Mmm, delish." She took a deep breath. "So, how are things going at Parrish International? Jackson tells me you're proving to be quite valuable." Amber studied her for any traces of suspicion or jealousy, but saw none. Daphne looked genuinely happy for her, but there was also a touch of concern in her face. "Is everyone treating you well? No problems, right?" Amber was surprised by the question. "No, none at all. I'm loving it. Thank you so much for recommending me. It's so different from Rollins, and everyone is really nice." "So, what was the big emergency?" "What?" "Jackson coming home. What did he need that disrupted your plans?" "Nothing. He just wanted a few minutes with me before I went out." Amber arched an eyebrow. "A few minutes for what?" Daphne turned red. "Oh, that. He can't seem to get enough of you. That's pretty amazing. You've been married, what, 9 years?
12.
Amber could tell she was making Daphne uncomfortable, so she switched tactics. She leaned in and lowered her voice.
"Consider yourself lucky. One of the reasons I left home was because of my boyfriend, Marco."
"What do you mean?"
"I was crazy about him. We'd been dating since high school. He was the only one I'd ever been with, so I didn't know."
Now Daphne was bending closer.
"Didn't know what?"
She squirmed and made herself look embarrassed.
"That it wasn't normal. You know, that guys should sort of be ready. I had to do things just to help him be able to make love to me. He told me I wasn't pretty enough to get him excited without some help."
She was laying it on pretty thick, but it seemed like Daphne believed it.
"The last straw was when he asked me to bring another man into the bedroom."
"What?" Daphne's mouth fell open.
"Yeah, turned out he was gay. Didn't want to admit it or something. You know how those small towns can be."
"Have you dated anyone since?"
"A few guys here and there, but no one serious. Truthfully, I'm a little nervous about sleeping with someone again. What if I find out that it really was me?"
Daphne shook her head.
"That's crazy, Amber. His sexual orientation had nothing to do with you. And you're lovely. When you find the right man, you'll know it."
"Is that how you felt when you found Jackson?" Daphne paused a moment, taking a sip of her wine.
"Well, I guess Jackson swept me off my feet. My father became ill after we began dating,
and Jackson was my rock. After that, things moved really quickly, and before I knew it, we were married. I never expected it. He dated sophisticated and accomplished women. I wasn't quite sure what he saw in me. Come on, Daff, you're gorgeous. That's sweet, but so were they. And they were wealthy and worldly. I was just a girl from a small town. I didn't know anything about his world. So what do you think it was that made you special? Daphne refilled her wine glass and took a long swallow. I think he liked having a blank canvas. I was young, only 26, and he was 10 years older. I was so focused on building Julie's smile, I wasn't taken in by him. He told me later that he never knew whether the women he went out with wanted him or his money. Amber found that hard to believe. Even if he'd been dead broke, he was still gorgeous, brilliant, and charming. How did he know you didn't care about his money? I actually tried to cool things off. He didn't really turn my head. But then, he was so wonderful to my family, and they all encouraged me not to let him get away. See, you are lucky. Look how wonderful it turned out. You have such a great life. Daphne smiled. Nobody's life is perfect, Amber. It sure seems it. It looks as close to perfect as you can pretty well get. I'm very fortunate. I have 2 healthy children. That's something I never take for granted. Amber wanted to keep things focused on marriage. Yes, of course, but your relationship seems like a fairy tale from the outside. Jackson looks at you like he worships you. He's very attentive. I suppose sometimes I just need a little breathing room. It can feel confining, having to fit into the mold of the CEO's wife. He has high expectations. Sometimes I'd like to just sit around and watch House of Cards, instead of going to another charity function or business event. Oh, boo-hoo, Amber thought. It must be so hard to have to dress up in designer gowns and drink expensive wine and munch on caviar. She mustered a sympathetic look. I can see that. I would feel so out of place having to do all that. But you make it look so easy. Did it take you long to fit in? The first couple of years were rough. But Meredith came to my rescue. She helped me navigate the treacherous social circles here in Bishop's Harbor. She laughed. Once you have Meredith on your side, everyone falls into line. She's been the Foundation's staunchest supporter. Until you, that is. You must have felt very lucky. Sort of like I feel having you. Exactly. The bottle was empty, and Amber was about to suggest they order another when Daphne's phone lit up with a text. She scanned it, then looked at Amber apologetically. It's Bella. She's had a nightmare. I need to go home. That little brat. Even when she wasn't present, she was messing up Amber's plans. Oh, poor darling. Does that happen often? Daphne shook her head. Not too often. Sorry to have to cut our evening short. If you don't mind, I'll have Tommy take me right away, then drop you home. Of course, give her a kiss from Aunt Amber, Amber said, throwing it out there. Why not elevate her status? Daphne squeezed her hand as they walked out to the waiting car. I like that. I will. Although she was disappointed that she wouldn't get another glass of that divine wine, she'd gotten some of what she'd wanted. The beginning of a profile of Jackson's perfect woman. She would build it, tidbit by tidbit, until she was an exact replica of what he found irresistible. Only she would be a newer, younger version. 22. Amber inhaled the intoxicating smell of the ocean. It was a perfectly gorgeous Sunday morning, and she and Daphne had already been out on the water for the last hour. Jackson was in Brussels on business, and Daphne had invited Amber to spend the weekend. She had been slightly dubious when Daphne suggested they go kayaking, as she'd never done it before and wasn't sure she wanted her first foray to be on the deep waters of Long Island Sound. But she'd had nothing to worry about. The water was still as glass when they started out, and within a half hour, Amber was feeling sure and confident. They stayed close to the shore at first, and Amber marveled at the peacefulness of the early morning quiet, the only sounds birdsong, and the lapping of water against their paddles. Everything was still, so wonderfully devoid of the bustle and noise of everyday life. They glided along beside each other, both silent and content.
"Shall we go out a little farther?" Daphne broke the silence.
"I guess so. Is it safe?"
"Perfectly."
Amber worked to keep up with Daphne's sure strokes, breathing hard as she exerted herself. She was impressed with Daphne's stamina. As they moved farther from shore, the water took on an entirely different aura. The first time a boat passed them, she thought she would be swamped by its wake. But the second time it happened, she got an adrenaline rush riding the small swells.
"I love this, Daph. I'm so glad you made me come."
"I knew you'd like it. I'm glad. Now I'll have a partner. Jackson doesn't really enjoy kayaking. He'd rather be on the boat." Well, Amber thought, the boat would be good, too. She hadn't been on his Hatteras yet, but she knew it wouldn't be long before she got an invitation.
"Don't you like the boat?" Amber asked.
"Oh, sure, I like it. But it's a completely different experience. It needed some work before going back into the water. Should be sometime in late June. We'll all go out together. Then you can make your own judgment."
"What's the name of it?"
"Bellatada," Daphne answered, her smile holding a touch of embarrassment. Amber thought for a minute.
"Oh, I get it. The beginning of each of your names. Jackson's three girls."
"A little silly, I guess."
"Not at all. I think it's sweet."
Inwardly, she was choking on her words.
"Shall we head back? It's almost 10.
Daphne looked at her watch and adjusted her visor. It didn't take long to reach the beach in front of the house and deposit the kayaks. As they walked up the path to the house, the sounds of laughter and girlish squeals reached them. Bella and Tallulah were splashing around in the swimming pool with their father. Amber turned to Daphne.
"I thought Jackson was coming back tonight."
"Me too," Daphne said and picked up her pace. He looked up and ran a hand through his wet hair.
"Hello, you two. Been out kayaking?"
"We have. When did you get home? I'm sorry I wasn't here, but I thought you were coming in tonight,"
Daphne said, sounding strained.
"We finished up last night, so I decided to fly home this morning."
Bella was holding on to his back and splashing with her feet. He turned to grab her, and she squealed with delight as he tossed her back into the water. She pushed up through the water and swam to him.
"More, Daddy!"
But he began walking to the shallow end of the pool, wiping the water from his face.
"That's all, sweetie. Time to take a break."
For once, there was no obnoxious complaining from Bella. It had to have been a first. Jackson handed towels to the girls and started drying himself with his own. It was impossible not to look at his body, wet and glistening, as he stepped closer to Daphne and kissed her.
"It's good to be home," he said.
Daphne had asked Amber to spend the day, but now that Jackson was home, Amber knew she had to deliver the obligatory, "I don't want to be in the way" speech.
"I had a great time kayaking, Daph. Thanks a bunch. I'm going to let you have your family time now."
"What do you mean? You can't leave yet."
"I really should. I'm sure Jackson would like to be alone with you and the girls."
"Nonsense. You know how he feels about you. You're like family. Come on, we'll have fun.
Absolutely, Jackson said. You're more than welcome to stay.
Are you sure?